just as control hungry as you would expect from a dictatorial regime, which is a concern for people who like to see populism and like to see democracy throughout the world. It's now 2 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City. I mean, I think you can weigh a lot. You can harshly judge, what the Bolivarian Revolution has turned into in Venezuela. Certainly you have to go against the opposition of money and power, but to, kind of turn yourself into something that, resembles, tyranny, to oppose that, I think is hard for a lot of people to swallow and still, justify.
It's so tough, though, to figure it all out, what is going on, because the reports, and there's only one, it's a newspaper from Caracas, but it was saying that state-sponsored paramilitaries on motorcycles were roaming middle-class neighborhoods, shooting tear gas canisters into residential homes and buildings, and then just shooting everybody who came out. And there was no mention of it anywhere, except 2 days ago in The Guardian, there was a tiny, tiny little article in the bottom that just said, "Venezuela, why are you protesting?" And then it said, February 21st, 2014, "If you have taken part in the demonstrations in Venezuela, share your photos and tell us why you are protesting. What is the one thing you would most like to change?"
How about the masked paramilitaries on motorcycles shooting tear gas into apartments and then killing anyone that runs out of those?
National Guardsmen executing civilians right on the street.
And again, it's hard to say what's actually going on.
Yeah,
there.
What is going on?
Because I don't know. I'm not down there. You're not down there. I mean, the information that is coming to us from the media is scant at best, and it's going to be through the filter of the West, because, clearly there is a opposition in the mainstream in America to that Chavez regime, to that Bolivar. Even though Chavez is dead, it's still the Chavez regime there, because of who became his successor was, essentially handpicked by him, and he is continuing that Bolivarian revolutionary stance of using the wealth of Venezuela for the poor. But it's what the struggle then becomes is you do not have the political support of the people that have the most power. And you look at the economic, realities of Venezuela, because they have had to put, or they have in an effort to help the people of the country, put so many price and wage and, centralized, controls on their economy. You're only allowed to exchange so many of your Venezuelan dollars for American dollars when you travel abroad. And that was something that they changed. They lowered that amount of money that you could exchange, because they are very concerned with not having the dollars that they need to continue their economy, which is another one of those very interesting paradoxes of, the reality of the control of America that has over the wealth and the resources of countries all over this planet, where even though Venezuela has so much opposition to American influence, from Washington, from the Pentagon, from the State Department, they still need American dollars. That's the only way they keep their economy going. And they have to put controls on what people do with their own money to prevent a, economic collapse. I mean, it's a very interesting situation. And how it will turn out, it seems as though it's going to turn out on the negative for the people and on the positive for the powers that be. And it would appear is that when it all is said and done, the Bolivarian Revolution will just be a small blip on the radar of the Venezuelan, power structure. And things will go back to some semblance of normalcy, where you have, the political and economic elites of Venezuela in control and doing the beck and call of Washington.
That's what I'm wondering. Who's getting shot? Is it the wealthy I mean, they're not sending it. I mean, because they're saying that it's state sponsored National Guardsmen. Are they going? And they're not shooting all the peasants.
And certainly, well, right. And certainly that could be propaganda. I mean, that might not be a true story. You know, the people who are the political base of support for, you know, the Chavez, for the Bolivarian Revolution, are the poor, are the people who do not live in middle class neighborhoods, who do not, you know, live in high rise apartment buildings, who live in favelas on the side of mountains, corrugated, you know, steel roofs and cinder block walls, etc. I mean, that is the power structure behind, you know, Chavez.
And if you talk to people out there who do business in there, you know, there are certain Barnards out there who do a lot of business there. They'll tell you that it's a terrible place because they take all the money from the rich and they give it to the poor, and the rich people, or not the rich people, but their captains of industry are getting screwed over.
Sure. All right. That would be, you know, a
but you remind people too sometimes that, you know, this country, even though it's falling apart now, but this country wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for the way we used to tax the people with the most. I mean, the highway system and all the dams and all the great things that we have in this country were built with all that money that we took taxing the hell out of the rich. And the rich didn't complain back then.
Come on, Rachel Maddow, would you just calm down, okay? I mean, you know, the tax structure that you're talking about, you know, generally speaking, does not come into existence until World War II. Now, the interstate system, I understand you have a great fondness for, but the Hoover Dam was built before World War II.
Okay.
And so much of what makes America great happened way before World War II, way before the institution of the progressive income tax. I mean, so much of what made America great was done not by, you know, the government, but by the people.
I know you're a big fan of Mount Rushmore.
Huge fan. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. I mean, what made America so great is the upward mobility of everything and the fact that anyone could do it. Some obstacles to that now. Let's go to the phones. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You're on the radio.
Hi, this is Bill from Kansas City. How you guys doing?
Morning, Bill. How are you, man?
Good. Just trying to stay awake. Good show tonight. I had a question for you because I know we were talking about Venezuela and Hugo Chavez and you know, socialism and democracy and all that. So I had a question for you. I'm trying to bring this closer to home because, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about this in particular. So the new mayor of New York City, isn't he a self-proclaimed socialist?
He is definitely on the left wing of the spectrum.
Okay, so I read this article this couple days ago, and it was actually pretty disturbing. If it's true, I read that in New York City, more black babies are aborted than born, which is pretty disturbing.
But Bill, what would that have to do with the recently elected mayor of New York, who has a job as comptroller or something like that beforehand, or advocate?
No. It actually has nothing to do with him. It's just the thought of that city in general. If that statistic is true, and then you also have what I believe is one of the biggest police states. I don't know if not. Maybe.
No, New York has turned into such a police state that it's almost like it's not a part of this country anymore. I mean, it's so heavily monitored, surveilled, and controlled. It is much, much less like an American city and more like something out of.
It's not really New York anymore. It's like New London.
Right.
Exactly. So. But my thought is, you know, with the new mayor, if he believes in socialism and stuff, wouldn't that mean you have even less economic freedom now? And then you tie it in with the police cameras and all that sort of stuff. Isn't New York City closer to Venezuela than it is to anywhere in America? I mean, is that radical thinking or?
I think it might be, Bill. Because first off, you got to do this thing, like where they say, check your premises, right? Because like you started out with the self-proclaimed, and I'm sorry, hi, I'm Michael T. Justice, happy to see you all. but you started out with the premise that he's a self-proclaimed socialist, and I don't know that that's true, and I'm not, you know, but that kind of lends itself to your argument, sure, but how does that, I guess I'm worried about where you're going or wondering, you know, how you're trying to put this together.
Are you for like you said, or you brought up socialism?
You brought up black abortion and that, and I'm just, it sounds like you've been bombarded with right-wing talking points, and they don't, well, and I'm not trying to be, you know, disparaging. I'm saying that's what it sounds like, and so what are your premises? Abortion
overall,
has gone down overall.
My overall thought is that the state encourages, I don't know, because again, I think this is pretty radical, but this isn't right-wing talking points. This is through my own studies.
Right. The state, I think you can make an argument that in America, the state does not encourage abortion as much as it encourages having children out of wedlock. I think the government would encourage children being born out of wedlock more than it would encourage abortion, and it would fund more money is spent, I'm sure, from the federal government.
The people who have children
out of wedlock than people having or people having children
or
in
people
wedlock.
Having abortions.
Yeah. I would imagine more money is spent paying for, you know, childbirth than abortions in federal dollars.
Well, okay, in this country, yes, but I'm talking specifically in New York City. I mean, they voted and they elected this guy, so obviously, you know, they don't have a problem with socialism,
correct?
But
wait a minute. You have to remember that for the previous 20 years, you had conservative mayors running. Bloomberg
were conservative. Those guys were not. Giuliani was not a conservative.
You got to remember
he was
that
in New York.
He was a neocon,
right? Giuliani. I mean, come on. I mean, the point here is that Giuliani was a law and order conservative in New York. Now, granted, being a conservative in New York is like, as to poach a John Stewart joke, is like being a homosexual in Alabama. I mean. It's a issue of perspective, right?
It's a lot fewer.
There's just a theory of relativity when we talk about a conservative in New York is going to be different than a conservative in South Carolina is the point, you know. And Bloomberg again would be considered. I mean, he would be a classic example of what they call a Rockefeller Republican, you know, which used to exist. Used to have this idea you had people who were very conservative economically, but were very socially liberal.
Because he was a Republican up until
he
became mayor, right? I mean, he
Bloomberg's a Republican because he's a billionaire. Are there any, you know, I mean, you know, that's where he's a Republican for tax reasons, right? It's a throwback to a different era.
Yeah.
But ultimately, Bill, I guess I'd like to know what. So you're trying to say that because New York is liberal,
he's comparing the socialist policies of Bill de Blasio to the Bolivarian Revolution of Venezuela, and I think that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, see, I think we get our Americanism wrapped up with our capitalism too much. Like, that is the stamp of America, and I don't think it has to be that way.
What, are you talking about NASCAR instead?
Well,
what's the stamp of America?
The ideas of freedom and that idealism that you talk about, and
the National Football League.
You're talking about super big gulps.
Well, no, I mean seriously though, right? Do we have to like accept that unless you are bottom line capitalism, then that is that's the benchmark of how American you are?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're either a capitalist or you're a socialist.
Well, I mean, I know you guys are saying that. But
you're either a capitalist or a Canadian, bro.
But, Bill, is that where you're standing with that?
Say that again?
So, like, they're not as American because they're
I'm not saying he's not as
socialist.
American. I'm just saying the way that city is ran is very to the left. I mean, I mentioned the police state.
Left. I mean, that's not a left
thing.
Well,
technically,
Hitler had a police state.
It's
right?
An experiment.
Not to throw out the Hitler word.
Technically, the nanny state is a bit of a liberal construction. And the idea that because liberalism
there you are, going to these premises things because
no,
that makes it sound like no. if it's a police state
liberalism,
that's wrapped up in the flag and we get rid of abortion and all the liberal crap, that's going to make it better. You think that's going to get rid of these cameras?
I'm talking about classically the concept is that liberalism says the government is going to make decisions better than individuals. The government is going to be able to decide things better than individuals will be able to decide for themselves. That's kind of a concept of liberalism, whereas conservatism would have more of an individual take upon things. These are traditional concepts. You can't necessarily apply these to the current political situation we have today.
Can I say something to Bill here? Bill, as somebody who used to live in New York, I can tell you, I grew up not far from there. And for what it's worth, I mean, here in the Midwest, it's very easy to look at New York and say, like, oh, my God, you know, all the cameras, you know, what a place. But, you know, police state and all that. But Kansas City really is a small town, you know, when you compare it to a city like New York. When I was a kid, we used to go to New York, and New York was not a safe place. It was a very dangerous place. It was not what it is today. The one thing I'll say about New York, and Benjamin and myself, we went to Chicago not too long ago. Chicago is a town where I don't feel safe. Now, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, we were walking around at night and stuff. It's not like the most dangerous city in America, but I certainly was watching my back. Chicago had a kind of an eerie vibe to it. One thing I can say about New York is that modern New York in 2014 is that it is the safest big city I have ever been to. I mean, yes, there's a lot of cameras, and yes, you get frisked and searched, every other day, but there was never a time where I was walking anywhere, no matter what time of day or night it was. There was never a point where I ever feared for my life in, like, the biggest city in America because it was, you know, you had cops on horses, cops on, you know, bikes, cops on foot, cops dressed as bums. I mean, everywhere. I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, yeah, having that many people on top of each other, you give up a little, you know, but I will say that New York changed a lot. And I the cameras and everything else, never once did I ever feel. I mean, there's definitely probably the safest city in America, I would say. And people that live in New York will tell you that New York's the safest city you could possibly go to. You go to a place like, you know, New Orleans at night, St. Louis at night, Chicago at night, all the Mississippi River towns, right. They are not so safe at night.
And I think Chicago Memphis, is the most dangerous city in
it's
America.
That's not true. Based upon what? I mean,
Kansas, they have like that monstrous
Kansas City has a higher murder
rate, right?
Kansas City has a higher per capita murder rate than Chicago does.
I stand corrected. Let's go hang out down on you. Let's go down to the
Cabrini. But you know what Bill's going to tell you? Can I tell you what Bill's going to tell you, Jesse?
No, what's that?
Tell him, Bill. Tell him.
We'll be able to tell him, Ben.
They're all liberal cities.
That New York traded in its liberty for security.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what
the Statue of Liberty is now the Lady of Security.
It might be
she's
a safer
guard.
City. I mean, okay. So you guys have all those cops, but I mean, there's still a lot of murders there. How many? There's still over hundreds of people getting killed there.
But the murders that happened,
I think the murder rate in New York peaked somewhere in the 80s at over 2,000 a year, and now it's well below 500. So
sure. And most of them are in Astoria, anyway. So
right, and but I mean, 500. That's more than what Canada has as a country as a you know a whole year. So I mean, I could be making that up, but my point is that. You can get robbed or anything anywhere. I mean, I feel pretty safe here on the plaza, but, you know, people do get robbed, and there's a police.
Ben got robbed on the plaza.
I mean, you know, the plaza is probably the most unsafe place to be in Kansas City. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I personally, I think you, I mean, I would, I don't know. I think you're more likely to get mugged on the plaza than you are 31st and Prospect, but that's me.
But can I make one more point, too? And another point, you know, you guys have all those cops and you have that police state. I think where it really became problematic is during the Occupy Wall Street protest. From what I saw, maybe this was overblown, but a lot of those people were just, you know, exercising their First Amendment rights, and look what the police state did to those people. To me, that seems pretty troubling.
That's the trade-off, though. That's what we just said.
Sure.
You trade in your liberty for security, and that's why when they had, you remember in 2004, when they had the Republican National Convention was in New York City.
Freedom zone.
They had the free speech zones, which was that metal cage 3 blocks away from the event. And that was, you know, sure, you have your First Amendment right. You have your First Amendment right.
Can I say something about that, though?
No, you can't.
The First Amendment right.
Absolutely not.
Is, and it shouldn't be like this, but it is like this, is that if a bunch of, say, you know, folks from, you know, say, Johnson County, a bunch of, like, you know, your average middle class looking folks with, you know, ties on and that were, you know, wearing a bunch of Oakley glasses, if they went and decided to occupy somewhere, they wouldn't be messed with as much. The problem with the Occupy movements and things like that is that when you go and you see those things up close, they're mostly, it's like there's no festival that day. So it's like everybody, so like the majority of the folks that are there, they look homeless. Their right. dogs are there. They have the bandanas on their dogs. They're the tie-dyes. There's usually a drum circle. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that. But I'm saying that from the point of view of law enforcement, it's very easy to go in and bust something like that up. Because when you put it on the nightly news, it's a bunch of dirty kids with dreadlocks smoking, you know, pot and holding up, you know.
I believe the term is red doper diaper
baby. Red diaper doper baby.
Red diaper doper baby. Exactly. And that's just the unfortunate thing. You know, if I was personally going to start an Occupy movement, I would try to get as much.
So everybody put on your suit and tie.
Yeah, or I'd be like, stuck, you, no, you put your hat up in a hair.
And that's not illegitimate.
Put your hair up in a hat.
That's not illegitimate. That's what Martin Luther King did, right? He said, we're going to protest, but we're going to do it in a certain way. So put your bats down.
I'm not saying it's good or bad.
There's a way we're going to do this. And yeah, we need
But if a bunch of if a bunch of Wall Street executives decided to occupy Wall Street, they wouldn't get broken up as fast as a bunch of kids in fish shirts with
Wall Street executives do occupy Wall Street.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, if a bunch of Wall Street guys committed fraud, I mean, they wouldn't get arrested. I mean, that's been proven as well. So,
right.
I mean, those guys get away with anything. So,
I mean, if a bunch of people from Johnson County start occupying a park, you know, they call it a country club and start charging exorbitant membership dues. I mean, it's a difference of realities.
That's true. That's true.
Nonprofit groups would show up with donuts and coffee.
Yeah, only if there was a charity golf event that morning.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and sorry if I called in and derailed the show here, but that was just my overall thought is, New York is just, it really disturbs me. I, you know, just thinking of all this stuff. And then, getting back to the abortion part, you know, more babies being killed than born. I mean, good Lord, that's pretty disturbing.
But we do know.
I guess I'd want to know where you got that number from, because the last kind of report I remember hearing about abortion rates was that they are way, way down. And again, not from just being outlawed, but from people kind of making better choices.
I'll have to find the link again, but I wanted to say it was off of Reuters, maybe? I forget what it was off of exactly, but there, I can go back and find that link.
There's a strong demographic connection between the, you know, legalization of abortion through Roe versus Wade and the drop in the crime rate in this country. I mean, it's not really that confusing to understand either. Know, children that would not be wanted, that are not going to be raised to be productive members of society, when they are taken out of the population because they are never part of the population, that you are going to have less crime because you're going to have less social, you know, disease.
Right. But I mean, it's like, unfortunate. If we treat everyone like a criminal and throw everyone in jail, there'd be no crime.
That's not my point here. I'm just saying that, you know what we're talking about. And that's a cold, hard way to look at it. But it's kind of the solution for our future, unless we figure something else out. I mean, I don't understand how we could solve the economic crisis in this country, what's taking place throughout the entirety of the industrialized world with, robotics and nanotechnology being the future and human beings becoming less and less an integral part of the blue-collar workforce. I mean, forced abortions for the poor might be the only solution that we have. It's not a pretty thought to have. It really isn't. But and I say that somewhat comically, but also, I mean, I don't, you know, what are we going to do with this immense population that has no place, you know, within the economy?
I mean, it's so easy to sit here in Kansas City and say, New York, there's no freedom there. But I'd say they're doing pretty good for a city that has, 8.5 million people living in an area the size of the radius smaller than Kansas City city limits.
Is it physically smaller than Kansas City? I know it's.
I think the only
much
town
more dense.
The only town in America that's physically bigger than Kansas City, I think, is L.A. And it's not by much.
Or Houston. Houston's pretty big. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, for, you know, let me tell you, if we woke up tomorrow and there was 8.5 million people here in Kansas City, I think we'd have some problems.
Right. Well, yeah, you would, but, again, I just have a problem with some of the way they go about it. Like, and I'll give you another example. I don't know if you do you know who Plaxico Burress is, the guy who plays football.
Yeah, I know who Plaxico Burress is.
Is he the one that shot himself?
Yeah, he shot himself in the foot, and he got 2 years in prison for that. I mean, to me, that is just mind-blowing.
He had a gun in public in a city with 8.5 million people.
That he didn't keep very good control of, and it went off. That it hit himself in the foot is
he's lucky
the blessing
he only did 2 years.
In all this, but it could have been the baby in the cab next door.
Right, but can you really do they really interpret the law that way, though?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to have a gun,
yeah, if I go out here
in
the middle of 39th Street in Maine and just start shooting wildly and don't hit anybody, it's going to be treated like, what the hell is wrong with you, dude? You could have killed somebody.
No,
right?
But
I mean, that will be how
and
you do
it. I think the gun had a permit, too, if I'm not mistaken.
But he fired
you still
the
can't
weapon
have it in a club.
Wildly. He had it in the wrong place, and he obviously didn't have control over it. He shot himself.
There's no reason why anybody should have a gun in a club. I don't care if you're in Wichita or if you're in New York City. I mean, there's just no reason.
Security?
What if you're at a gun club?
Like a rod and gun club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you trade that liberty for
security? All right, Bill, we appreciate your phone call, sir. We'll continue on.
You know, this is good because I was waiting for you to get here, Michael T, because I wanted to bring this up. And this, I just wanted to see what you guys think of this. A good friend of mine, an older gentleman, he sent me this.
What's that kind
of
doing me?
He sent me this email, and I just wanted to, while we're on the subject of guns, I just want to know what you guys think of this. I was sitting at the bar last night next to two older GIs in their 30s. We started talking about cars and other things, shared a few drinks. Then one of them tells me that he went into the army to become a chaplain. I laughed and said, "Are you supposed to be drinking?" He didn't share my joke and told me that since he has learned what the army has been doing, he hasn't been able to stop drinking. Mm-hmm. I was kind of set back when he leaned over and said, "I can't tell you anymore, but promise me one thing." And I said, "What's that?" He replied, and I quote, "If I come to your house and tell you to give me your guns, I want you to shoot me." Of course, I laughed, and I said, "I couldn't shoot you, man." He replied, "No, I'm very serious. I am giving you permission to shoot me if I'm the one on your doorstep." We continued to talk about religion and other things. And I might add that this man of God never used a swear word during the night and was very well educated, respectful, well spoken. I got up to head home, shook his hand, and he said to me, "Remember what I told you. God be with you and have a good night." Now, I don't know what to make of that. I mean, this is a guy, he's a friend of my dad's. He's not, like, going to just send me, he just randomly sent me this email, and he's like, oh, what do you think of this?
So this was him actually having that?
Yeah, this happened a few nights ago, Friday night, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was talking to a couple older GIs, and so this is the thing, I wanted to talk to both of you about this, because I argue with gun nuts, you know, gun lovers all the time. Now, I understand that everyone wants to say, I'm like, why do you have so many guns? And people will say, well, it's my Second Amendment right. Well, I would argue that, I don't know how you two feel about this, that to me, as an American, I feel like it's more of a right for me to know that I'm not going to get shot for playing my music too loud or texting in a movie theater or because, you know, some racist homophobe out there has too many guns under his seat. I think it's more of a basic American right to know that I'm not going to get shot and nobody I love is going to get shot. That's a more important right than you being able to have guns. And anyone that says, well, the reason why we bear arms is not for any other reason than we should be able to, you know, stage a revolution if necessary against our government. Well, I got news for you. That argument, if the government decides that they're going to come down on us, our 30-odd sixes and our shotguns and our pistols are going to be no match for drones and heat-seeking missiles. And people out in the country that say,
no,
well,
30-odd
six
could probably take a drone out.
You know,
I mean, that's a pretty big bullet, bro.
And I know a lot of people that live out in the country that's like, well, you know, that's how I feed my family in the winter. I go out and it's like, go to the grocery store, bro. It's 2014.
It ain't
the 1800s.
Free. You get a side of beef for free.
Yeah, but you know how much it costs to get that turned into
a side of beef for free. If you're hunting cows, Michael T, your ass might get shot too.
Yeah, if you shoot a cow out on the range, you're going to have some explaining to do.
I got a Second Amendment right.
So I'm just curious, what do you guys make of that, and what's your thoughts on that?
When you were telling me that, I was like, man, this sounds like one of those internet things that goes around.
It does sound like
one of those internet
things.
But I also have a personal story. I know a guy that went to the Army and went to training, and when he came back, he said that during one of his training classes, somebody who was a veteran sergeant training type person, right, said, listen, the time is going to come when you're going to have to make a decision where you want to stand, whether you want to. And this is because whether you want to be that guy, just like that guy was saying, when I come and take your weapons. Now, part of that.
This is not an internet thing that went around.
Right.
This is a friend of mine that emailed me
right.
this.
Although, again, the same thing I said to Bill, I think still applies, is we have to think about how much, and I don't want to use pre-used terms, but I will, the what do they call it, the right-wing talking machine? You know, when you get stuff in the echo chamber and it's floating around, you know what I mean? Fox News is the number one news source in this country. Whether you like that or not, there's a lot of people, not a lot, very few actually, less than a million, right? That watch any particular show, but they have friends that they tell who don't watch the news, and they just hear you say that, yeah, this guy said he's going to come to our doors and take our, you know what I mean? So I don't know how much of that is people in the military, not that they got some order or that they saw some pre-order, because I can't imagine there's like a damn execution or you know, a general plan that's just floating around that some sergeant sees
says,
hey, wow, here's the contingency plan for taking weapons from general citizens of the American states. We're just going to walk up to their door and say, please hand us your guns. I don't think they've ever seen that order. Now, they may believe that order is coming we believe that order is coming, and they're just us.
I never actually thought that they would try to take
well, but
guns.
I mean, there's
but
a lot of people
did,
that do.
Guys,
you've heard that, right?
Guys, they did that in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
Well, see, that's like
that
without
thing.
Reason. There's good. See, don't that guy is telling your friend, shoot me if I come ask for your guns. There might be a rationale where that might make sense.
Really? The rationale. I mean, so do you remember after Katrina when they were taking people's guns? It was the National Guard going into neighborhoods to secure those neighborhoods from all the chaos that followed after the absence of government and the looting and all that.
Yeah, there were people that were standing on their roof, and the little motorboats came up and said, "We understand you have this gun, this gun, this gun." And they're like, "Well, it's actually down there in the house." And they're like, "Well, we have Navy SEALs on hand. They had scuba divers with them ready to go down into the houses
now,
to go wherever they said there were
report.
To get the guns." And then they said, "Thank you very much," and left the people sitting on the roofs.
So they went down and got the
guns. I don't remember that. That's pretty intense. But
no, they had Navy SEAL divers.
I do remember, you know, property owners, you know, people that
I do. I remember seeing videos of people
getting
handcuffed step back
as folks went, as their houses were searched and their guns were confiscated.
Okay,
and you know, okay, so
that could be a better use of that resource. I don't know.
Not imagine not a better use of that resource, but why in that situation? If which is an extenuating circumstance where it's actually a time in which somebody might need
their own
a gun
weapon,
to protect their stuff because you can't call 911 because the phone doesn't work and nobody's there to pick it up. Why are they then walking around taking people's guns? And you have a situation, you know, in post-Katrina where you had all kinds of, you know, private military contractors. You had all kinds of Blackwater types and Blackwater running around that town. They had their guns,
right.
But individual citizens didn't have their guns.
Right.
So is there a contingency plan? Is there some sort of plan of action? Has the government, has the Pentagon developed a plan for confiscating?
I'll take that back. They may
absolutely.
Have seen that.
They've absolutely. I mean, so what would precipitate that plan being? You have to imagine that the Pentagon has a scenario worked out for. I mean, there's a guy who sits in somewhere, part of the Pentagon who just makes stuff up. Whose his entire job is to use his fantasy and his imagination to come up with scenarios so they can come up with plans.
If
to,
the Canadians tunnel underneath this,
exactly.
Then this is our plan, right? Yeah, So, okay, there are
plans.
So
does that exist? Absolutely.
So there,
what
there
would precipitate that? I don't know.
Well, that's going to be much more subjective. That's the problem, right? Is it's going to be much more subjective as to when
it takes place. With all the stuff with FEMA camps.
Because they've got the plans, but when do they initiate it? That's going to be up to an individual or whatever to decide, you know, whether we go with this plan or the bring them food and water plan, right? It's like there's...
Well, it's like the previous caller. The way that he was like, "Can you believe they gave Plastico Burress 2 years?" It's like, yeah, he brought a firearm into a club in New York City.
Right.
Hello. I mean, it's, you know what I mean?
Right.
I believe that the previous caller shares the same opinion as most people I run into. That's like, "Can you believe they gave that guy, that ain't freedom, 2 years for having a gun in a club in New York City?" I mean, yeah. Why do you even have a gun in New York City?
But to your larger point, right, about the greater right being to feel safe than to run around and be like, "Well, I got the right to get a bigger gun too."
Yeah, well, that idea of feeling safe when you have a firearm gets quickly perverted. We've seen two stories in the last, I mean, well, Jordan Davis is more than the last month, but I mean,
Michael Dunn.
Right.
That's Jordan Davis, right?
That's Michael Dunn's the guy that shot. Jordan Davis is the kid that got shot.
Sure.
But the story of the texting in the movie theater where people take
this...
That
was Florida too, right?
Yes. Yeah. People take this idea of safety and they are now concealed and carried and they're thinking about safety and it's like all of a sudden they're, you know...
Threatened
comfort,
by texting.
Their comfort level... It's all of a sudden really sensitive when they're carrying a firearm.
Right.
I mean, and the guy that did the texting, you know, shooting, that guy was a former cop. He should have had
He got up and
some,
went outside to get
right.
his weapon.
He should have had some experience in whether or not it was a good opportunity to feel, a time to feel insecure or unsafe or that his life was threatened. You figure that a guy who is a law enforcement officer would be a little more sensitive
right.
to when he should feel unsafe. But, I mean, there was a story, it was a Kentucky or it was something like that, where a local law enforcement officer was serving a parole violation check-in. Somebody had violated their parole. She had gone to a trailer park and had knocked on a door. The child that answered the door was holding a Wii Nintendo Wii game controller. The cop, you know, knocking on the door. Kid goes, who is it? Nobody says anything. The cop's not identifying themselves. Knocking on the door again. The kid opens up the door holding this game controller. Cop shoots the kid right away, thinking that the controller is a gun.
Like a kid, kid. Like a...
A kid. A 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid.
Jeez.
And that was last week. And it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. This is a cop serving a parole violation check-in, going to see what the person who is violating their terms of parole is doing. And they, I mean, so obviously there is maybe some sensitivity, you know, as far as their safety. I mean, I would imagine a cop, every time they knock on a door, every time they pull a car over, they have to heighten their senses, be a little more alert, you know, because you don't know what you're dealing with.
Right.
But my goodness.
Guys,
I mean,
Kansas City. Did you hear what happened here in Kansas City about a week ago in Raytown? This guy found out his wife was cheating on him. He had a 13-year-old son who knew about it, and the son had called him and said, yeah, mom was with so-and-so last night, and he's going to give me a ride to school. The guy that she was seeing was giving the son a ride to school. This is in Raytown. I just read this in the Star this week. And so he was waiting at the school when mom's boyfriend decided to drop this guy off. He got out of the car and shot the guy at point-blank range right in the parking lot of the school. And this was in Raytown. Here in Kent. No, the husband shot the guy who his wife was seeing.
So he shot the other man.
Mm-hmm.
I've never understood that nonsense. I know this is not about guns, but I don't understand why you want to take it out on the person who wasn't part of the relationship. That's the person.
Well, I mean, you know, you shoot them both.
Well, I'm,
and then you
I
have to shoot yourself, right?
Yeah,
I would go for the.
That's what I'm saying. Our right, my basic thing is that my basic American right. To me, I think it's way more important, basic American right, to know that when I go out, I'm not going to get shot, or when you take your kids to the mall, they're not going to get shot.
So the story about the kid with the video game control, that was out of Georgia, and it was a 17-year-old boy who was shot and killed by a police officer that said the boy was holding a video game controller when he was shot opening the door. Christopher Roop was shot and killed last Friday when the officer showed up at the door of his home to serve a probation violation warrant for the boy's father. A female officer told the Georgia Bureau of Investigation that Roop pointed a gun at her after he opened the door, but the family's attorney, Cole Law, says the boy was holding a Nintendo Wii video game controller. Everyone's a little sensitive now about this stuff, and, you know, I mean, you would like to think that the people, you know, law enforcement would be the most experienced, would be
but
the most comfortable,
hyped.
But they're just...
They're more and more hyped up now. And you said
scary,
that was in Georgia?
Georgia, yeah, right. And
see,
I
was in Georgia in 2001, and I remember a story. They were, like, patting the cop on the back because he was going through some place, through this apartment complex, and there were a couple of kids, teenagers, playing some kind of, what is that, air pellet gun thing where they shoot each other. And the guy came around, and this kid was hiding under the stairs with a pistol. And he actually had the frame of mind to, like, process that that's not who you're looking for. That's whatever, you know, and did not kill the kid. And they were patting him on the back that, you know, he hadn't killed this kid. And
I think things have changed. I think things
are much more. They're much more hyped up and on. And they're what I heard somebody talking about this. Their focus, their policy, is no longer de-escalation. It seems it's almost like it's shut down. Like I'm in control here or whatever. You know, like I mean, like you're supposed to know that they're the cops, and you put your weapon, whatever you're doing, down and get on the ground and just wait. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they got the little... Yeah, I think that might be what's wrong with Florida. Like, they're permanently flaccid.
I think, like, you have guys like that cop in the movie theater who's like, well, you know, George Zimmerman got away with it. I'm an ex-cop. I'm just going to shoot this kid just because.
Right.
I mean, really? Like, why do you shoot someone for texting?
If you can get away with killing somebody for, like, wanting to be a cop.
Well, what about this story?
What if you are a cop?
What about this story out of Calumet City? I think this is Illinois. A 15-year-old boy suffered from autism, was shot and killed by police after he threatened one of the officers with a knife. The family called police after Stephen Watts, the child who suffers from Asperger's, became upset and did not want to go to school. Police were called at about 8:30 to the home Five officers were consequently sent to the home. When they arrived, a boy was in the basement holding a kitchen knife. Two of the officers went to the basement, and the boy lashed out with a knife and struck one of them in the fore. Oh, this is nothing. I'm reading the wrong story. There's how many stories of there are there of autistic children with knives shooting them? But essentially, where it was not dissimilar to the Susan Stuckey event in Prairie Village several years ago, where it was a matter of the you know, officers sent to the scene trying to defuse the situation did not have the requisite training to defuse the situation. They had the training to escalate the situation. I mean, it wasn't the ability to, you know, calm the situation down. It was more, you know, my personal safety is more important than anything else. And I understand a cop wants to go home. But the reality is that so much of what you do as a law enforcement officer, as a cop, is deal with crazy people. That's got to be like 75-80% of your job is dealing with like lunatics, right? I mean, who else is calling the cops all the time? I mean, people get robbed, people get assaulted. You know, this does happen. But for the most part, we're dealing with crazy people. And not being able to handle that, I mean, that's a
maybe they should rotate them out. They should have a much shorter term. You know, like the, I don't know, like maybe the parking police should be populated with people who used to be on the street as, you know, in the danger zone. Because there's got to be a point, because I could see if you spend 15 years on the force or whatever, and you're out there, and you're, like you said, you're always dealing with these folks. And just like you accidentally read that story, you accidentally read that story because you were looking for a story. But if you're a cop, I would imagine the same way we would circulate things that were of interest to us, they probably see every day a story where a cop barely got out alive and mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It was just stopping a family with four kids and a wife and a dog, and it turns out John Diligent was in the freaking thing, you know? So they get hyped up and like that. So maybe because they're going to be on an edge, they shouldn't be out there more than 5 or 6 years.
I think the policy's changing too. Like they don't have apparently they don't have negotiators as much anymore. If somebody's standing on the ledge of a building, they bring in the snipers.
Shoot that bastard! Yeah, let's get well, this no, and
that's
with.
I mean, that's what
that's
we found out.
Kill the overtime budget.
That's what we found out about, you know, the Susan Stuckey affair, is that you did have people who were trained negotiators to defuse the situation, who were on the scene, but were not used. I mean, it's just a failure in command, I guess.
Right.
Failure in delegation of authority or control or something. I'm just very
See, and that's what I mean by it's subjective at a point, because if a different field commander, I don't know if that's the title, had been there, right, and he would have been like, all right, you, stand down. It's kind of like in that movie, The Negotiator, right, where you got the guy, Kevin Spacey, sitting there like going, I need to talk to this guy. Let me negotiate this situation. And then you got these SWAT guys over there like going, get that guy out of there so we can go on in there and shut this down. Now, granted, they wanted to kill him because, you know, I don't know if you saw that movie.
I did not.
But they were dirty cops. But I can easily see that dynamic playing out. If this is the bank hostage situation and we're in there, Ben, the negotiator, wants to, you know, give this guy a call and try and talk him down from getting a few hostages here and there. And Jesse, the SWAT guy, is like, no, man, we've already got, you know, my TAC teams are in place and we can storm that joint and get out of there. And maybe we lose three hostages, but that's it. You know what I mean? And if I'm the commander, notice how I put myself in charge, then mm-hmm. you know, I got to make that decision. Do I want to risk trying to communicate with this guy and then he does something crazy and kills four or five hostages? Then people are like going, well, why didn't you send in this? You know what I mean? So it's subjective as to how I'm going to play that out. Because if I'm a more cool-handed guy, then I might.
So it's funny that we're talking about.
But, you know, right. I mean, and we are talking about being cool, and we are talking about the reality of these situations. And, you know, the reality of the situation is if you're a police officer, I mean, your life could be on the line. I mean, that's what you get paid for. That's why you have the job you have. I mean, that's why you have the authority to use your weapon. That's why you wear bulletproof vests.
Right.
This is why you have a pension That ain't nobody going to touch. Right. You know, you're never going to read in the paper that, you know, they're touching the cops' pensions because they're not going to play with the cops' pensions.
They tried that in Oakland, and the cops wrote wrote an opinion piece and said, hey, I just don't call the police.
Right. So back to the original point.
But the original point is this. Like you were saying earlier, Jesse, you feel like you have a right in this country to not be the potential victim of somebody else's right, of somebody's Second Amendment. You don't have that right. You don't have – I mean – the idea that you have a right to not be caught up in...
I have the right to not be shot?
Yeah, I mean, you legally, you have the right to not be shot. But realistically, I mean, how can you enforce that? I mean, what's the, you know...
I would say, what's more important to you? Your right to own guns or your right to not get shot?
But I don't necessarily have a right to not get shot.
So you accept the right to have a gun is real, but you don't accept the right to not be shot is real? I mean, we don't have a right.
I mean, your boys are going to be in high school someday. I mean, what's going to happen when, you know, your boy's in high school and some crazy kid comes in?
The government can guarantee one of those things, you know, can guarantee the respect of one of those things, but can't guarantee the respect of the other. I mean, how do you say, all right, no more people getting shot? I mean, I'm pretty sure the government already said that.
Right.
Right?
No, I'm with you there.
I mean, that's already the law is you can't get shot. You shouldn't get shot. If somebody does shoot you, you know, criminally they're liable and potentially civilly they're liable, you know, for shooting you. I mean, that already exists on the books, on the law. I mean, that's the case. I mean, I
know we got off topic. We started talking about how if the people aren't going to shoot you, the cops are going to shoot you. But still, I mean, do you feel like, I mean, do we really feel like that, you know, everybody here needs a gun? I mean, really?
I don't. I don't carry a gun with me. And you look at the stories of these people with these concealed carry permits that are taking it to the next level. I think they're doing it a lot because they got a little cowboy in them because they're carrying a gun.
Right.
I mean, in reality, they're like, I don't have to back down from this dude. You know why? I got a pistol in my pocket.
Right.
I'm not afraid. I mean, and that is a very perverted reality. I, you know, that might be what some guys.
Unintended consequence.
For some people, that is their every intention.
And that's
getting
the Michael Dunn
carry.
Types. That's what he's like. You got to take care of these people, and then they'll figure out to start treating with respect.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to kill some black kids, and I won't have to listen to that rap music playing too loud at the convenience store.
I love how he said, somebody said that you had said, turn that something stuff down. And he's like, nah, I wouldn't have said that. I would have said rap crap. Like,
right.
Like, yeah,
But, you know, that guy, that Michael Dunn character, you can tell how perverted he is because, you know, after he killed somebody, he went and got a pizza and a bottle of wine and, you know, humped his girlfriend in a hotel room or probably a motel. He seemed like a motel.
Yeah, I'm sure he had this sense of, like, oh, manliness. You know what I mean?
Baby, we're going to a Hampton Inn tonight.
I mean, I'm sure he was feeling like you would if you were fresh from battle, you know what I mean? I stood those bastards down. Because I don't know that he knew he had killed them at that point.
You know, if you shoot
somebody,
ten times,
should die.
No, but if you shoot 10 times into a car, I mean, you have to, I mean...
I don't think people realize all this stuff sometimes. I think the same thing in your brain that makes you feel like, oh, I got a gun, also makes you... I think that in this country, we don't appreciate how we're morphed or formed by the images that we see. We see people shoot cars all the time, and the guys drive away. Every day on TV, they go, bah, 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 bah,
you would
and
like
they shoot back 100 times.
Fair enough.
And you go, no way those guys go through
that. That might be a legitimate perspective for somebody who's 12 years old to have.
I think it's a legitimate perspective, or maybe not legitimate, but it's a perspective held by a lot of folks. I mean, in that situation, you go, bam, 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 and the car keeps driving away. You go, well, I didn't hit him, but I bet those bastards will turn the radio down the next time a respectable guy like me asks him to turn it down.
Right. Yeah, see, I mean,
I'm just trying to get a guy some benefit. I don't feel like, and I haven't followed that case closely. I've only seen like because the verdict came in this week sometime last week
they mistried the guy. Yeah.
Right, so that's why it's been
on the murder
as popular because I hadn't heard much about it over the past 2 years.
He's still going to go to jail for a long time,
right.
And they'll probably retry him on the murder charge.
Right, just for general purposes, or principle. But I didn't get the sense, as he was talking, and I guess that's what his point was, but I didn't get the sense that he was like, yeah, I killed that bastard. Like, I don't know, maybe he did. Did he go to the hotel with his girlfriend knowing full well he had killed a man, and that was like his...
You kind of have...
I mean, you say I'm not that sure if you're, I guess
he was trying to say he was threatened and he was standing his ground. I mean, that was his defense, is that, you know, he felt threatened,
right?
Because he heard them,
and then he went on about his way. He didn't like call the police and turn himself in, and or say, you know, hey, I shot that lousy bastard. He was trying to kill me or whatever. I got the feeling he didn't know that he had killed them, or he had killed the kid that at that moment.
Kind of have to have an idea. I mean, just
well, yeah, you know, you shot at someone,
right? I mean, I get paranoid when I shoot one load and I think about all the kids I may have created. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I that's just me though. I mean, maybe I'm a more...
He always says, "I don't know how this happened."
Yeah. You know, maybe I'm a more cause and effect kind of guy, you know, than some other people. I mean, it's just unrealistic.
We are talking about Florida.
Yeah, we are talking about Florida.
I mean, seriously.
Midwesterners love to hate on Florida.
It's not about... I'm not hating on Florida. I loved on Florida up until the 80s. My mom lived down there for a while, and I was down there going, wow, this is January? I love it.
No, it's a boogan place.
But, yeah, the last few years has been filled with, you know, ever since 2000, right? Since... And maybe that's what... got it all started was the whole...
A lot of perverted stories come out of Florida and Texas.
Speaking of,
did
you see that W has come out of hiding? Do you see what his big crusade is now?
Literacy.
President George W. Bush fights to take disorder out of PTSD. He's got this new campaign he's launched.
I can get behind that.
His administration's
policies.
Like,
I don't know what
policies.
He's meaning, though.
I mean,
he says we're getting rid of the D. PTS is an injury. It's not a disorder. The problem is when you call it a disorder, veterans don't think they can be treated. And an employer says, I don't want to hire somebody with a disorder. So our mission is to begin to change the dialogue in the United States. And we've got a lot of good support.
Wow.
That's good to know, isn't
it? There'd be some, mm-hmm.
I mean,
a lot of purple hearts if they call it an injury. I mean, I'm just...
I mean, George Bush is responsible for this generation's
PTS.
Post-traumatic stress. So, I mean, that's...
I would say it's
so
more of a Cheney
naming rights
thing.
Well, I mean, his name is on it anyway.
Yeah. His name's on it, yeah.
So he should get to name it PTS. That's fair.
Or do something about it. I mean...
Hmm.
All right, well, coming up in a few minutes, you'll have your brand new suicide. It'll be Suicide 302.
Portions of tonight's Paragon Radio brought to you by Goldman Sachs.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Goldman with their men with their sacks full of gold. Those guys?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I'm not going to do that.
Well, we covered some things this evening. Did we not?
We did.
We'll cover some more things after the suicide.
We will cover more. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm sure people will want to respond to this little piece of the conversation, and I'll try to carry it forward because I've been thinking a lot about that whole Michael Dunn case. I know that's not the one you brought up, but your spin on it is much in line with where I was thinking about it. It's like, what's more important, like that we have that.
Yeah, being able to have a cabinet full of guns in your kitchen, or being able to know that when you send your kids to school, they're not going to get shot by some guy who's mad at his math teacher.
Right. And I think ultimately it comes down to us is how we respond to some of this stuff. Like, because if we let it go, like this Dunn character and Zimmerman and stuff like that, or even beyond that, like to the police, like if we demand better from our police, and that's where the citizens come in, like you can exercise your right en masse, I think, better, not by getting guns like en masse, like thousands and millions of people putting guns in their pockets, but by millions of people saying the police had better act more rationally and act, you know, don't be wasting your time doing this profiling over here when you should
be. I'm pretty sure people kill more people than cops kill people every year.
So they're not going to
That's changing fast.
Motivate on that.
I'm just saying, you know, you can put it on the police, but we're really just talking about, you know, society. We're just talking about the nature of America.
I'm looking at like 100 years from now. Like, look at it like this. Like, if we finally take all the guns away from the citizens, and most people argue, well, like, then the cops will just have guns. Well, maybe someday we can be like, you know, France, where the cops don't have guns either.
We all just have little mustaches. It's 3 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City.
We throw Nutella at each other.
We'll be right back after these messages with the brand new Suicide.